You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
Today on our show, we're talking with Julie Gross. Julie, thanks so much for being with me today.
My pleasure.
So let's talk about what you're working on now. I imagine you're painting and or working on a show. What's happening in your studio at the moment, or what are you preparing for?
Well, I'm actually up in my upstate location in the country, surrounded by green, which is wonderful. And I'm about to start a series of work on paper that will more than likely lead to large paintings, which is how I normally work. And the work on paper is in the vicinity of 22 by 30, so it's not huge. And I work in a very methodical way. They're gouache paintings that essentially get worked out as a drawing and then get filled in with color. So it's, as I said, very methodical, step by step. The color is worked out essentially intuitively, but I've worked with color for many years. I've taught color for many years. I feel like the subject is extremely, you know, close to me. And so the relationships that get set up are essentially intuitively based. I don't like using a lot of color. I like repeating color and seeing relationships emerge out of a sense of surprise and, you know, an unexpectedness. I often redo things, but the work is very clean, and because there isn't a lot of incident on the surface showing, the final product is really quite slick and clean. I guess those are the only words I can use to apply it, although I don't necessarily love those words per se, but that's really the overall effect that the work has. It's
as opposed
precise.
To showing. Right. I mean, I think, you know, as I understand your work, I mean, you're talking about these gouaches and these studies which are made with, if I understand correctly, compasses, and you're creating these geometric forms that then the color's added to, but it's also that the lines are hard on all of these, as opposed to it being kind of like brushstroke or, so to speak, painterly kind of thing.
Exactly. And actually, as I'm talking to you to kind of help me clarify my, you know, verbal descriptions of the visual work, I have my website up. So that's kind of bringing me and can bring you up to date. The circle paintings that I was working on and, you know, for at least, I would say, 14 or 15 years, so it's quite a long period of time, are not literally what I'm doing right now. Essentially, for about the last 2 years, I've started doing what I might call ribbons of color, sometimes bifurcated in the surface of the canvas, so that there are two rows of these stripes that are kind of wiggly lines. They're essentially S-curves that repeat, sometimes are symmetrically meeting each other, kind of like two wavy lines meeting each other in the top and the middle. So you almost get a fish-like shape as a result. And it's still all curvilinear, but per se, circles don't usually emerge in the work and have not for the past couple of years. I felt like I had pretty much exhausted that format, although I loved doing it and did it for a really long time. And at a certain point, as I guess most artists do, they feel they've exhausted the possibilities of a certain idea. And it took me quite a while to come to what I was doing now. And in a certain way, it's kind of interesting. I've gone back to work I did in the late 80s that were involved with sine waves. But now with much fuller color, kind of being brought in.
And that's how it all started off. Sorry to interrupt, but that's how it all started off, right, with this interest in sine waves. Was that the beginning of that?
Why don't we
go back into when you began working that? Maybe we can just trace your career from just after college when you graduated. What were you making?
Literally right after college, I did graphic design work and did that for 5 years. So painting didn't really get started for me till I had the chance to work at Yaddo, which is an artist colony up in Saratoga Springs, New York, and spent the whole summer painting for the first time since I graduated college. And the kind of revelation there was, yeah, I'm a painter. And graphic design was kind of put way on the back burner. Although I loved doing it when I did it, part of it was a practical need to help support a burgeoning artist, also known as my former husband. So that's how I sort of utilized the first 4 or 5 years of my post-college life. And then when I was no longer married and on my own and went back to grad school and got a master's and started teaching, that's when my, quote, actual painting life, you know, started really on the edge of that marriage ending and the graphic design going that away and starting to paint and then getting my master's and getting my teaching kind of, you know, work started so I could help support my painting. And
so then after your master's, that's when you really started. When did you begin exhibiting? When was your first exhibit?
In the early 70s. I think, in fact, I had my first one-person show just prior to finishing grad school. And, in fact, it really served kind of as my thesis project. Although I additionally wrote a thesis because I loved the subject that I wanted to study. I went ahead and wrote a full thesis, but I also had a one-person show at the same time. So I kind of did double duty, but I didn't regret it for a moment because of the thesis.
And what was the subject you were studying?
The thesis was basically all about Islamic and pre-Islamic brick and tile patterns from the 11th to the, I believe it was the 15th or 16th century, essentially in the Middle Eastern and Islamic countries. So everything from studying the buildings that were built in Samarkand, which is in Russia, to buildings in Iran and Iraq that were essentially mosque structures that have the most remarkable geometric brick and tile patterns. And I came upon them, I can't even remember how, but once I did, I was totally taken in and decided to study the history of them and the structure of them, and that's what the thesis was based on.
That's fascinating. I would imagine that kind of patterning, I mean, I don't know much about it. I've seen some of that, but that's, I mean, in terms of just what's happening graphically or visually, it's such kind of non-Western compositions, I would imagine. Maybe it relates to their language. I don't know, but it's kind of fascinating patterns they were making.
Absolutely, absolutely. And a very mathematical, very geometric. And in that sense, one could argue, you know, a certain level of abstract and contemporary quality to them in the sense they're, yeah, totally non-objective. Figuration was really not allowed in that religion. So I think that was kind of the default to go into that kind of structure and, you know, very mathematical, very geometric, very repetitive, very rhythmic, and a lot of tension, too, involved. It wasn't, you know, pretty stuff. It was structurally quite strong. And I was definitely drawn to that aspect of it and the visual tension of it, which I've always been very involved with in my work. So it spoke to me and, you know, got into it as deeply as I could. Really enjoyed doing the research. I was at the New York Public Library for weeks and months, getting all the research I could. I didn't travel to, unfortunately, and even to this day, I'm kind of sorry that I didn't have a chance to go to places like Samarkand, for instance, in Russia, where some of the most amazing buildings are. But again, there are places in Iraq and Iran that, you know, aren't necessarily the most comfortable places to be visiting these days. So at some point, I'd really still like to go to Samarkand, but we'll see.
Well, I'm sure you will. So what happened next? So then you graduated, now you have, you know, career as a fine artist, but you're a painter and you're in New York, I guess.
Right.
And you're trying to get a show.
Yeah. I have actually a show coming up. I showed quite a bit in 2014, even a little bit in this year. Essentially started out as a, I must say, Soho pioneer, pretty much on the edge of when Soho wasn't even yet called Soho. There were all these factories for fabric storage, doll making, you know, all kinds of interesting, strange industry that closed down at 5 o'clock, and the streets of Soho were totally desolate, and no one was around because everyone, all the workers left. And the only people that were there were the sprinkling of artists that had started moving in the late, mid to late 60s. So the neighborhood really started, as you can imagine, you know, has evolved to the point where it's pure tourism and shopping at this point. Pretty obnoxious, but still wonderful architecture, still great spaces, and, you know, it's the neighborhood. So that's, and where I've been pretty much since I graduated college.
And how did you begin to get shows there? What were some of the first shows? I mean, you seem to, you know, have an enormous amount of shows in the past several years. What, I'm kind of curious how that momentum built up and how you got yourself.
Yeah, well, you know, it might have been to some degree that, I mean, compared to now, there were few galleries and very few artists, literally, compared to the way it is today. So, you know, the competition was very different. Not to say there weren't other wonderful artists around. I know there were artists around that I still know and see today who were showing in the neighborhood. And because there was so, it was all kind of beginning, obviously, I guess opportunities were more available. You know, there's always competition, but compared to the way it is today, you know, it's much, I would think, to some degree easier to have become visible. I mean, I had a lot of the top dealers, many of whom are still here today, come to the studio and see my work. And so that was really terrific. You know, such a different time.
And in those days, you would go to a gallery and just invite a dealer and they would come by. I mean, it was
yeah. Yeah, you know, the scene being so much smaller, more, quote, user-friendly, if I can put it in those terms, and you'd see dealers more, there'd be much less of the aura of business and corporate and, you know, art sales and huge prices. It was a very, very different reality. So dealers were more accessible. It was a much smaller scene. So, logistically, it was much easier for artists to start making a headway at that point. It was just
well, and then at the same time, the art market as we know it now was just beginning or didn't even quite exist then.
Yeah, it existed in a smaller way. But, I mean, there were still very, you know, Ivan Carr, for instance, who was one of the bigger art dealers in Soho at the time, Paula Cooper, they were wonderful folks and very accessible too, particularly Ivan, and showed, you know, and open to looking at artists. I mean, both of those dealers were at my studio a couple of times, and I showed with Ivan a couple of times, not Paula, but you know, you realize looking back how you were kind of at the beginning of things, and at least there, it's kind of amazing.
And so when did your work take a shift during that period to basing some of your forms off sine curves or sine waves?
Right, right. The very beginning work I did right around the time I was in grad school and started becoming, you know, doing the work as a painter that I ended up starting to show was very process oriented. Something called process painting was, I guess you could say, maybe a movement at that point. And it was very much about letting the material do its work in a kind of intuitively, physically intuitive way on the part of the material, if I can put it in those terms. So I worked on the floor, very large scale. I tacked huge pieces of canvases to the floor. I built a platform where I could stretch the canvas on a nice, flat, even surface and stapled it all around and started pouring acrylic paint onto the surface and using squeegees on a long pole and big sponges and started moving the paint around in that manner till an image emerged to the point where I was happy with it. And they were relatively monochromatic, so all the physical incident that would occur would kind of not be, how can I put it, interrupted or confused by a lot of color action. It was really the paint, physical paint doing its thing in one color with maybe dark versions of it, you know, in a relatively monochromatic way and different surface qualities. So it was, you know, yeah, so it was like that. And
so
I
that,
did,
that doesn't yeah. sound like the sine curve work there. That sounds like
No way.
That's kind of large scale work that you're doing on the floor that's quite different.
Quite different. Absolutely. Yeah. In fact, you could say the opposite, other than the fact that they're still non-objective.
I know, those paintings just sound like a lot of fun to make. I mean, just on the
they
floor,
were.
Pushing all the paint around sounds wonderful.
They were. Sort of sandbox, children in the sandbox, you know, but with paint instead of sand. Just moving stuff around and, you know, seeing what would come up. After all, I was just starting. So in a way, it really was a primal approach to kind of trying to figure out what I wanted to do, you know, and seeing what the material could do for me and how I'd respond to it and start to form it. So it was quite, yeah, primary, yeah.
And what happened next? When did that turn into the more geometric? It's a very different way of working. It sounds
Oh, what started to happen after that series, which, you know, took, I'm not even sure now, maybe a year to 2 years of doing, and I showed some of that work too, that early work. The work then continued in that vein. However, I started framing it around the edges of the rectangle. I would rule maybe 3 or 4 inch borders. And then the borders would start having much different color and more built-up surfaces to play against the process, you know, poured part. So then all of a sudden you had a kind of, I don't know, bifurcation or duality of visual incidents of form and color relationships. So all of a sudden there was a more relational, you know, in a more specific way, a more relational thing going on between the center of the painting and the framed edges. And I could bring in different color and different qualities of paint application, and they started playing against each other.
That makes sense. And so that's a kind of precursor to the way the work with that you're using the compass for also has a kind of dialogue with each other and seems to have a direct relationship in some way.
It's true. There was also, I have to say, after I'd say in 78, 79, 80, a period where my work changed again. To some degree, it happened when I had to change studio spaces, like when my location actually shifted, which happened 2 or 3 times because living in lofts at that point, even though they were relatively inexpensive, you know, there were still landlords who wanted to jack up the rent and you'd be forced to move to another space.
Right.
And sometimes with a move to another space, you start fresh with your work just because the physical relationship is so changed and your life has shifted anyway, and potentially other ways too. So, yeah. So when I got to a new space, after doing the work I've just outlined to you, my work started again in a somewhat different way. And that very process-oriented and somewhat expressionistic qualities of paint and working on the floor and, you know, the squeegees and sponges, et cetera, kind of came to a halt. And I started doing something very, very different. Which was something called, what I called body tracing. You have to realize, too, that around that time, I got very involved in the women's movement, the beginning of, quote, women's liberation, and was involved in a consciousness-raising group. And along with that came kind of hyper and heightened awareness of me as a woman, not just as an artist. And all that brought, and, you know, my cohort at that time were thinking in similar ways, some of us artists in this particular group, some of us not, but along with this awareness came a shift in my studio practice. So the work I started doing at that point, it was kind of like a little break in between compared to what I'm doing now, which kind of has gone back to the geometry and the color, were something called body tracings. And what I did was very kind of immediate. I sat myself down on very large pieces of paper and I started drawing around my perimeter. and getting these interesting sort of concentric lines. So there was still a kind of, what would we call it, biomorphic geometry? I don't know. You know, it basically the forms came out of what my forms were physically, my physical forms. But what you're left with when you look at the drawings, and the reason I'm even mentioning it now is I've had a studio visit. I've had a studio assistant help me in the last few months, and we've been going through my work, essentially, the archive of my work, and I've been pulling out this work. So it's kind of all in my forebrain right now because I've been looking at it all. And these body tracings have just emerged out of my closet about 2 weeks ago. And these body tracings were very organic, very concentrically linear responses to the pencil going against my body, against the perimeter of my body. As I sat on paper, as I laid down on paper, as I twisted into different positions on paper. And the drawings are pretty cool looking, I've got to admit. I've been showing them to a couple of dealers to get their response, and I've been getting some very nice response. So who knows, maybe they'll end up being on gallery walls at some point. But they're very big, they're very immediate, and I like them, you know, they're kind of cool. And I started using color along with pencil lines around these body perimeters, or, you know, using my body as a kind of template. I started using color as well as the graphite lines that started out as. Color started emerging, so I started getting these halated kind of concentric organic lines, and I kind of like how they look. And as I talk to you about it, and as I'm looking at my website right now, I'm looking at the homepage of my website, I'm looking at these sine waves and telling you what I'm telling you. I'm seeing,
they relate to that somewhat,
I'm
right?
Seeing relationships that are kind of like, oh my God, yeah, kind of interesting, yeah.
So that's very interesting. That kind of brings us up to where you are now, and in terms of that kind of painterly relationship. And I just wanted to ask you, in the past few years, it seems that you've been exhibiting a lot. In the past several years, you've been exhibiting a lot, group shows all over the city. How does that happen for you? Are you just invited everywhere now, or are you still seeking out group shows?
You know, it's so funny. I mean, when you're an artist in New York City, and you go to Chelsea, and you go to the Lower East Side, and a little bit uptown, but not so much as one used to, you know, on Madison Avenue, and there are so many dealers, and there are so many galleries, and there's so many artists, and there's so much going on. And, you know, you just go and you do your work, and it gets shown every now and then, and you have your wonderful friends. And the art world, I have to say, I'm sort of going off on a rail here, but the art world, the artist community is so fantastic. It's so sustaining. The friends that I've made, the people that I know, the people whose work I follow, you know, I show up a lot. I have to say, I'm really good about showing up for people's openings, and, you know, it's nice when people come to mind. But, you know, the world and the community is a fantastic one. This is aside and apart totally from the selling, from the prices, from the auctions, from the collectors, blah, 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 the gallery. You know, it's a whole other, I mean, we do the work.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
And I think, like, that's the most important thing.
I agree. And in regard to you, you know, getting all these shows everywhere, is it just you're going to other people's shows and you're meeting people, and that community is supportive, and that you're being invited to shows, or
are you also actively
looking for those kind of group
Brandon,
shows?
I have to say, I am not a big walk up to a dealer and ask them to come to my studio type person. In fact, and I'm sure most artists you talk to will probably say, oh, I hate doing that. Yuck. You know, I don't like going to dealers and saying, will you come to my studio? It's not that I don't like dealers. Is I don't want to have them say no. So I don't want the negative energy that's going to come my way from having to deal with that. You know what I mean? And so
right. The
things that have happened to me have been, I guess, I mean, it's as a result of doing the work, showing up in the studio, going to shows, supporting other artists, being part of that world, but not coddling up to dealers. And, you know, I'm not, Lord knows.
And by supporting other artists, you're talking about going to their shows.
Going studio visits, hanging out with them, getting to know their work. being part of the work, you know, not so much being part of the career building. That's not what I've ever. Now, I'm not saying that if people have come to me with interest in my work that I don't follow through. Absolutely. I'm pretty good about following through. But I don't go begging, you know, and I don't even want to use that word. I just don't go up to people who a lot of the time I'm just going to get a no. So it's like such negative energy. I don't like going there. You know what
right,
I mean?
I don't blame you.
Yeah, so it's kind of what's happened to me has pretty much happened, I guess, either as a result of people knowing the work, people liking it, people mentioning me to other people, you know? I mean,
right.
I do reach
but
out.
But
it's
the community.
Not, you're
in. It sounds like it's the community. It sounds like
yeah,
it's the community
yeah.
that you discuss, which
out,
is the
yeah.
friends, the studio visits, the art world that you're saying. It's actually
absolutely.
Supporting you so
and
much
the
in New York.
Support, the support I like to give to artists, maybe some of it's paying back. I don't know. I mean, I've done a little curating, and I have put other artists in shows a couple of times, and that was fun. It was a lot of work, but it was fun to do. I haven't done it as much as I probably should have. But yeah, you know, it's rare that, you know, anytime someone comes to me and evinces interest, I'm there. You know, I won't waste a minute. But I just don't do a lot of, you know, cold calling. You know, it's just not me.
And so in closing, when is your next show? What can we guide listeners to a show? This is coming out in
It's a hopeful
August.
Show with a new gallery that's kind of getting its legs, you know. It's a new gallery run by a woman named Jessie Britton in a town, somewhat upscale, lovely town called Sewickley, Pennsylvania. It's out right outside of Pittsburgh. And it's a huge new space called Art Space 616. She's had about 4 or 5 shows now, and she's hoping to keep it going. And I'm scheduled for a show there in February of 16. So that's the next that I'm aware of, the next show that will be a big, it's a huge space. So it will be a two-person show. The person I'm showing with is a sculptor named Leah Patagorsky. And she will be on the floor, and I will be on the walls. So that's what the next plan is. As far as in New York City, nothing that I'm aware of at the moment is about to happen, but I'll let everybody know should I find out that it will.
Very good. Julie, thank you so much for talking with me. I wish you the best of luck with those shows. I look forward to seeing them.
Brainerd, it was a pleasure speaking with you. I look forward to hearing more from you, and good luck with your work.
You're listening to Yale Radio WIBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.